You're listening to Boston Public Radio. 1 o'clock every day, we do something called Open Mic. Yesterday was Reverend Eugene Rivers. Tomorrow, it's the Globe's new editor, Brian McGrory. Thursday, Christopher Lydon. And Friday, Emily Rooney. Every Tuesday, Charlie Baker will join us in studio. He's the former head of Harvard Pilgrim. He was a Republican candidate for governor in 2010. And probably most importantly, a former selectman from Swampscott. Hello, Charlie Baker. How long did you serve?
And most importantly, what's there that? You go. I'm Swampscott Selectman, just like being a city councilor in Cambridge.
Thank you very much. Yes. One fabulous term.
Well, you learn the ropes, is it not?
That's
don't
exactly
you understand
right.
how it works working there? You know, I mentioned before you came on when I was introducing you that Mitt Romney apparently is going to be on Fox News with Ann this Sunday, giving his first interview ever. Scott Brown has got his regular gig on Sean Hannity. We hear Geraldo might be by hovering around.
And I'm playing with the big boys and girls.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you'd be great on Fox News. What do you think? How do you think that plays though locally if you're running in a state that's heavily Democratic, heavily independent, to be in Fox News? You think that helps or hurts?
I think I'm going to give the voters in Massachusetts a little more credit than maybe you guys on that one. My view is that at the end of the day, the voters will make the call based on what they think of the campaigns and the messages and the candidates. And then by the time you get to Election Day, yeah. whatever you were doing sort of in that other life will have faded, unless you really step on it and say a whole bunch of things that come back to haunt you a little
okay.
bit.
Hey, Charlie Baker, speaking of the candidates, yesterday, today, and then tomorrow is the deadline. Each of the three Republicans who are trying to get the Republican yep. nomination to replace John Kerry, they're bragging. They got 10,000 signatures. They got 20,000 signatures. You're not running. Bill Weld's not running. Scott Brown's not running. It sort of is the B team. And I don't even mean that in a pejorative way, the B team of Republican politics. How would you rate the Winslow, Gomez, who's the Sullivan axis, honestly?
Well, guys, you were all part of 2010 when Scott Brown's name was basically a sort of remote, never heard of Republican from Wrentham. And turned out that he was a little less remote than people thought he was.
I mean, Scott Brown. I interviewed Scott Brown.
Trust me.
I mean, you know that, right?
Well, I think, you know, politics is a funny business. And if you think you know what's going to happen, you may or may not be right. And I know all three of these people. I've known Dan and Mike for a really long time. I think all three of them, if they all get their signatures, and so far it looks like they will, are all going to run very spirited campaigns. And I think, you know, frankly, I think that's a good thing. And I'm looking forward to watching what happens on the Democratic side as well.
By the way, if you want to call Charlie Baker at 877-301-8970 and ask him if he's running for governor so we don't have to, you can do that now. Again, that's 877-301-8970. Why are you not in that race? We're going to talk about your new business in a second. But this is a huge opportunity. Senate seats only open up every 3 or 4 decades. In Massachusetts. I'm serious. Once Scott Brown was out, you would have been obviously the prohibitive favorite on the Republican side and probably in a dead heat with whoever the Democratic nominee is. Had no allure for you, no appeal?
I'm to tell you the truth, Jim, I've always been a lot more interested and a lot more focused on state and local issues, which is why I spent 8 years working in state government in the Weld and Cellucci administrations, why I ran for the Board of Selectmen in Swampscott, and why I ran for governor here in Massachusetts. I'm just a lot more focused on what goes on here than I am on what goes on in Washington. I obviously think that's really important, more so than ever, but it's not really what fires me up.
Let's go to Washington in a second. Before we do, but let's just get this out of the way since we brought it up. When I saw you on television, what, a month ago, you said your odds were 50-50 of doing this in 2014. It's been, what, 2 or 3 weeks? What are you, 55-45 now? Where are you? I'm serious.
I don't even remember saying 50-50.
You did say you. You said Mike Capuano said 50-50 the night before, so I do too.
Well, I think.
So what is it today?
I'm still in a we'll see mode, and that's where I'm going to stay for a while.
What will we see?
I said we'll see.
I know, but what is it that you will? I'm serious about this. What is it that stands between you and deciding that you're going to do this a second time in 2014?
Well, I think I just have to. I'd have to make a decision that I think the opportunity is real and that it would matter.
Fair enough.
I mean, I'm pretty much a relevance guy.
There was a piece in the Herald talking about a dream team ticket, which would be Scott Brown as governor, you as lieutenant governor. I don't see that happening.
Look at the look. Do we have a video on today? Our number's 877.
I think it's fair to say.
877-301-8970. 877-301-8970. Have you spoken to Brown since?
Scott and I, we're friends. We talk.
He said he was thinking of running for governor. Did you talk to him since he said that?
No, I haven't talked to him since then. That was like a week ago.
But he and I,
we talk every couple of weeks, and I'm sure that we'll talk about this too.
May I ask a non-state political question here, please?
What are you asking me?
I'm dying to know what you think. We just had John Conley in here, who's a city councilor, who's just announced that he's going to run against Tom Menino. Everyone who's run against Tom Menino since his first race, even in his first race, has just been, you know, slaughtered, for lack of a better word, at the voting booth. What do you think? Do you think Tom Menino, if he decides to run, can be beaten?
Boy, I mean, when you have an incumbent mayor who, in the last election, I think it was 75% of the people who voted for him said they'd actually shaken his hand.
57, but it's still unbelievable. Said they had personally met.
Yeah, I know.
Is that unbelievable?
I mean, he is, and the thing about him that's so special is, despite the number of years he's had the job, he never ever seems to tire of it or to be bored by it or to be thinking about something else. And I think those characteristics make him incredibly formidable. That said, I think John Connolly's a really good guy, and I think it takes a lot of courage, having been through this drill myself, to step up to the plate and jump in.
Well, I think one of the things that's unusual about Menino is that at this stage in a mayor's career, there's usually several probes going on simultaneously from the federal government.
Oh, he's as straight and arrow. He's as straight and arrow as you're ever going to find.
He's living that same little teeny tiny house out there in Hyde Park. The worst you hear about Tom Menino in terms of any sort of untoward activity is that a lot of developers don't like some of his development decisions in the city.
Well, every time you make one decision, you make 20 other people unhappy. That kind of comes with the territory. But I think the point you make about the mayor is spot on, which is that he's somebody who, whether you agree with him or disagree with him, has clearly never forgot where he came from.
No,
and
he's
never
not.
Will.
I did understand that there's a lot of potholes in front of Don Shafaro's International Place down there, right off the highway.
There's a lot of potholes in a lot of places these days. I mean, and that is a function of a winter in New England.
Our number is 877-301-8970. In a minute, I want to ask you about what's going on in Washington and what our current governor is blaming your fellow Republicans for. But let's start with, are we going to Andy in Grafton has a question for Charlie Baker. Good morning, Andy. Oh, good afternoon, Andy, and welcome to WGBH. I'll get it right tomorrow. Hi, Andy.
Hi, how you doing? I'm glad you guys are back on
Thank
the
you.
Radio.
Thanks.
And,
so glad.
Charlie Baker, I mean, I hope you run, but just to lose again. You
know? Thank you so
That's
much,
lovely.
Andy.
Wow, Andy.
That was a really gracious welcome for Charlie Baker.
Yeah.
Andy, thank you so much for your call. Let's hear the guy who you ran against yesterday was interviewed at the State House about this looming sequester thing that obviously kicks in Friday if there's no deal, and there won't be a deal. Here's Deval Patrick.
I think this is the failure of the Republican House. And I think it's a failure of the Republican House because the Republican Speaker, I believe, has the votes for a deal that's balanced. That reflects the view of an overwhelming majority of the American people. But he's got one plan on the table, one, and it's the president's, and he has not brought it forward.
By the way, in polls, it shows that a narrow majority of the American people share Deval Patrick's views that if this falls apart, it's a Republican's fault. You with him or no?
I think Kimberly Atkins in the aforementioned Boston Herald kind of hit the ball out
yeah,
of the park on
she's
this
terrific.
One.
What did
she say?
She said the governor should have been arguing, as other governors are, for a deal and not choosing to poke blame one place or the other. And I think that's exactly right. And I think the big problem Washington has is the whole debate about sequester for as many months as it's been going on now is all about positioning for the blame and not about positioning for the solution. And as somebody who's got three kids and as I've said before, wakes up in cold sweats about the size of the fiscal disaster I'm leaving for my children as a member of this generation, I think it's disgraceful and it's a pox on all of them. And I think the notion that somehow the president, who's the leader of the free world and probably one of the best orators and campaigners of all time, doesn't have a role to play in trying to make a deal happen on this is ridiculous.
Well, he is lousy about communicating. He was lousy in his first term, and he's been, where is his bully pulpit? Where is the president out there hitting home every single solitary?
Bully pulpit got him a tax increase for the first time on the wealthiest Americans after he had blinked twice in his first term. So I think he's used it more effectively
well, I don't
this
think
round.
So. That was within a couple of days of his reelection. If you can't have the.
I'm one of these guys who thinks that, you know, you can't go on spending more than $1 trillion than you take in every single year, which is what we've been doing for 5 years. And I fear for our nation's ability to just live up to its basic commitments to its citizens if we keep doing this.
Our number is 877-301-8970. If you want to be kinder than whoever that was, Andy, a couple of minutes ago, or you can be cruel.
Terrible.
You can call Charlie Baker again, 877-301-8970. Charlie,
by the way, I did pretty well in Grafton. So
you did do well in Grafton?
I did do well in
Does
Grafton.
Does that mean you won Grafton?
I'm pretty sure I won Grafton,
okay.
Yeah.
Health impacts. I was reading this morning, Marjorie was too. Assuming that this thing, well, it's not assuming, it is going to kick in on Friday. There's no, obviously, they're not even talking to each other. The impacts on things you care a lot about, from medical research, obviously from your Harvard Pilgrim days, to things like food inspection, going to take really major hits. What's your sense, putting aside blame for the moment, what's the impact if this thing kicks in, when this thing kicks on, kicks in the healthcare world?
You know, one of the articles that was being passed around was had Henry Aaron quoted in it, and who's a...
The real home run king. Is that right?
No,
not the
different. This is
a different.
This
Henry?
Is a different Henry.
Who is he?
He's the he's kind of the chief healthcare and economic guru at the Brookings Institution in Washington.
Can he hit? Can he hit or no?
G-chan.
I have absolutely
no
idea.
How come you didn't know that?
I can't answer that question.
I didn't even think about the other. I apologize for not thinking about the other Harry.
So Raven, go ahead.
He basically said that what people need to understand is that this whole debate about sequester as it relates to healthcare is sort of the first in what's going to be a series of discussions about this. And his larger point was, you know, whether you're talking Medicare or Medicaid, you can't get away from the fact that changes in healthcare are going to be part of the agenda for the next decade or so as the population ages and the cost of healthcare continues to rise. So his point was, you know, this is a problem to be sure. But there are much bigger fish that are going to have to be fried here.
So. Okay, so you won in Grafton. How'd you do in Natick?
I think I did pretty well in
Natick.
Want
to take a chance?
Let's take a chance.
Let's go to Sparky in Natick. You're on with Charlie Baker on WGBH. Hey, Sparky.
Hi, Sparky.
Hi, guys. Hawaii, I'm glad to find you again.
Great.
Thank you.
Mr. Baker.
Yes, sir.
Charlie. Yeah, we have met. I worked on the original Health Pilgrim down in Balls at Gateway.
No kidding.
I actually did some of the work in your office.
Well, thank you very much.
Nice to meet you. I did have a plan to save Pilgrim at the time, but no one liked it. So, but anyway, I think that we're in an area now where the Republican Party is trying to rebrand itself. And, you know, we need a Republican Party. We need Republicans, Democrats, need everybody. I think you're the guy to do it. And the thing is in Massachusetts, we have elected Republican governors, and we've done very well with Republican governors. So
I worked for two of them.
Possibility to get in there.
Is there a question at the end of this, Sparky, or you're just doing an analysis?
Are you going to run for governor of Massachusetts?
Maybe he'll get a better answer than I did.
We'll see, Sparky. I haven't figured that out, but I really do appreciate the props and the kind words.
Well, Sparky,
and I especially appreciate the work at Harvard Pilgrim.
But Sparky is right about...
Thanks, Sparky.
For my money and a lot of people's money, one of the big problems in Massachusetts is we are essentially a one-party state. You have a total stranglehold by Democrats up on Beacon Hill, and we've had, you know, one or two problems with former speakers, you know, leaving in
three felons in a row, to be specific.
Exactly, which is really terrible. There was that great... I think Mitt Romney had the best line. What was his line?
Gang of three. You don't want a gang of three on Beacon Hill.
That is a very effective line, I think, when you're running for governor. If you have total control on Beacon Hill, in the Democratic hands, why not have a Republican?
Well, and there were a bunch
Fox
of,
guarding the.
I mean, there were a bunch of folks who ran for the legislature on the House side in 2010 who ran on exactly that campaign that one party rule in the legislature is just as bad as one party rule. Period. And the Republicans doubled their numbers in the House. I mean, that message has resonance.
Yeah, it does. Why is it so hard here? Is there something uniquely un-Republican about Massachusetts? I remember doing a story years ago about a dating service that said that lots of Democratic women in Massachusetts did not want to date Republicans.
Ouch!
I'm married an independent.
There are definitely infrastructure and sort of organizational institutional issues. I mean, anybody who has looked at politics in Massachusetts at all knows that the Democratic infrastructure is big. I mean, they control virtually all the local offices, all the major cities. I mean, they own the electoral apparatus
and they get out the
most of Massachusetts. And on election
machine.
Day, that really matters. And there's always a big debate about how much it's worth. But if you talk to somebody like my former running mate, Richard Tessay, about how big a deal it is on election day, he'll be the first to tell you that. And I frankly believe that the Tierney people, if you could get them to be honest about it, would also tell you that everybody thought Richard was going to win that congressional race pretty easily. And in the end, he lost by 5,000 votes, and it was mostly just a spectacular turnout in Lynn that did him in.
Yeah. You know, we read a couple of weeks ago that you were, obviously you're now with General Catalyst Partners, and you cut this deal for something called, in Louisiana, Oceans Healthcare. And I'd like to hear what it is briefly, if you can. But you're chair of the board of this deal.
Yes,
so
I am.
And you just became chair of the board like a week ago or 2 weeks ago, whatever it was. So let's assume you decide that you said, we'll see. You see and you decide, I am going to run for governor. How do you do that and do this, especially since you just took over?
Well, I plan to be the chair of the board of Oceans kind of no matter what. And part of what made it an interesting company for me and for the people at General Catalyst is they had a great group of people who were managing the business. And I have a particular interest.
What do they do, by the way?
Geriatric psych care. And I have geriatric psychiatric services. And I have a particular interest in that because I have some family issues around that one. But bottom line is the whole reason General Catalyst exists is because a bunch of people who started businesses of their own and grew them didn't like a lot of the people they met in the venture capital and private equity world. So they decided to start a firm to invest in entrepreneurs. And so for the most part, this is a firm that invests in great management teams. That's really what we try to do.
You know, we're going to be doing a story either tomorrow or the next day about shaking hands, the new science about the relationship between germs and shaking hands. As a politician, you know, you were shaking hands by the hundreds
hugs,
every single day.
Lots of hugs.
Yeah. So yeah. Did you like carry a little pocket Purell, or did you just wash your hands a lot, or did you get a lot of colds and become immune? How did you handle the shaking hand issue?
Well, I would, every time I got out of the car or into the car, I would do the Purell thing, which I was doing as much for the people I was meeting as it was
right.
for me. And I would do the same thing when I got back in. And
You didn't get sick?
And I'm a big believer in sort of the retail nature of politics. I mean, that was, for a guy who had never run before, that was one of the parts I liked the most. I liked running into people and connecting with them and hugging them and having that opportunity to experience a moment, and I would hate to see us lose that. I think that's really important.
Hey, on the phone is one of our good buddies. She is the publisher of Bay Windows. Her name is Sue O'Connell, and she'd like to speak to Charlie Baker. How are you, Sue?
I'm well. Congratulations. Thanks for taking my part-time gig.
Charlie's the one who took your spot. You'll be here. Talk to Charlie.
Mr. Baker, you know, we didn't get a chance to talk during your run for governor over at Bay Windows, the big gay paper. And I know that obviously with your support of Richard Tessay, who's openly gay, there's no doubt where your heart is. But we're wondering, are you ready to come out and support complete access to public accommodations for transgendered citizens of Massachusetts? And are you ready to support same-sex marriage nationally like so many of your Republican brothers and sisters are doing?
Well, first of all, I guess what I would say is that my support for gay marriage was pretty obvious. Sorry, Jim, during the course of the campaign.
By the way, the sorry, Jim, was not about gay marriage. It was about him twisting open a Poland spring a la Senator Rubio. But go ahead.
I guess what I would say is I think the transgender piece has pretty much been settled in Massachusetts with the legislation that was passed during the last session. And I'm not sure I know what you're referring to on the second part of that question. Because there are so many.
The bathroom bill, which annoys
That one I think has been settled, right?
Well, how about it, Sue?
But how do you feel about it? It's settled, but how do you feel about it?
Well, I'm not really. Does that matter at this point? I mean, I think the legislation that was passed was amended significantly from the legislation that was before the House at the point in time that this issue was discussed. And I said at that point in time, I thought that wasn't a good bill. The bill that was passed was significantly different than that bill.
Would you have signed that one, or had you been governor, the amended bill?
I never read the other bill, but it certainly sounded a lot more like a bill I could support.
And we still don't have public accommodation, though, for transgender citizens.
So what does that mean, Sue? What do you mean?
That means that you can't, if you don't hire someone because they're transgender, you would be it would be against the law, but you can refuse a transgender person, your customer, the ability to use a bathroom.
Oh, okay.
Charlie Baker.
Well, I think everybody ought to be treated fairly and equally under the law. So that would be my fundamental policy prescription. But I would need to see sort of exactly what people have in mind.
Sue O'Connell, we love you. Thanks for calling.
Legally.
We'll be in here
Thank
soon.
You.
Hey, Charlie, before you go, we're going to be joined in a couple of minutes by a true heroine. I'm sure you saw in the paper the other day, 106-pound wrestler, a woman from North Andover, won the state wrestling championship.
She won it, okay.
She and her coach are going to join us in a couple of minutes. You have two sons and a daughter, right?
I do.
How would you feel about your daughter wrestling with boys or playing football with boys or doing some, you know, primarily male sport as a young woman. How would you feel about that?
Look, I think kids, within reason, Marjorie, commenting on your column this morning, I think kids ought to be allowed to pursue whatever particular objective they want to pursue, as long as it's consistent with sort of a healthy and robust development intellectually and physically. And I mean, my boys, as you know, Jim, play lots of sports, and my daughter plays sports as well. My daughter played hockey this year for the first time and had a great time.
Ice hockey. Good for her.
She actually scored a goal, which was for
Fantastic.
Her parents.
Very good.
Pretty special. But I think the bottom line here is that I think what she's at a school where there wasn't a girls' wrestling team, right?
So we'll find out in a couple of minutes.
I think this was her only opportunity to wrestle. And I think in a situation like that, good for her. Yeah.
Hey, Charlie Baker, good for you too. Thanks so much. We'll see you every Tuesday at 1 o'clock. He is Charlie Baker. It's great to see you, Charlie.
See you guys. Take care.
Thank you very much for being here. Coming up next, as Jim did just say, we've got this great kid, this high school senior, who just made sports history in Massachusetts on the wrestling team. You are listening to Boston Public Radio 89.7 WGBH.